Side 6. Chapter 20. 6 hours after claiming victory in California, Lake awoke to a frenzied morning of live interviews. He suffered through 18 in 2 hours, then flew to Washington. He went straight to his new campaign headquarters on the ground floor of a large office building on H Street, a stone's throw from the White House. He thanked his workers, almost none of whom were volunteers. He worked his crowd, shook their hands, all the while asking himself, "Where did all these people come from?" "We're gonna win," he said over and over, and everybody believed it. Why not? He met for an hour with his top people. He had $65 million, no debt. Terry had less than $1 million on hand, and he was still trying to count the money he owed. In fact, the Terry campaign had missed a federal filing deadline because its books were in such a mess. All cash had vanished. Contributions had stopped. Lake was getting all the money. The names of three potential vice presidents were debated with great enthusiasm. It was an exhilarating exercise because it meant the nomination was in the bag. Lake's first choice, Senator Nance from Michigan, was drawing fire because he'd had some shady business deals in another life. His partners had been of Italian extraction from Detroit, and Lake could close his eyes and see the press peeling skin off Nance. A committee was appointed to explore the issue further. And a committee was appointed to begin planning Lake's presence at the convention in Denver. Lake wanted a new speechwriter, now, and he wanted him working on the acceptance speech. Lake secretly marveled at his own overhead. His campaign chairman was getting $150,000 for the year, not for 12 months, but until Christmas. There was a chairman of finance, of policy, of media relations, of operations, and of strategic planning, and all had contracts for $120,000 for about 10 months of work. Each chairman had two or three immediate underlings, people Lake hardly knew, and they earned $90,000 apiece. Then there were the campaign assistants, or CAs, not the volunteers that most candidates attracted, but real employees who earned $50,000 each and kept the offices in a frenzy. There were dozens of them, and dozens of clerks and secretaries, and hell, nobody made less than $40,000. And on top of all this waste, Lake kept telling himself, if I make it to the White House, then I'll have to find jobs for them there. Every damned one of them. Kids now running around with Lake buttons on every lapel will expect to have West Wing clearances and jobs paying $80,000 a year. It's a drop in the bucket, he kept reminding himself. Don't get hung up on the small stuff when so much more is at stake. Negatives were pushed to the end of the meeting and given short shrift. A reporter from the Post had been digging into Lake's early business career. Without too much effort, he'd stumbled upon the Green Tree mess, a failed land development, 22 years in the past. Lake and a partner had bankrupted Green Tree, legally shafting creditors out of $800,000. The partner had been indicted for bankruptcy fraud, but a jury let him walk. No one laid a glove on Lake, and 7 times after that, the people of Arizona elected him to Congress. "I'll answer any question about Green Tree," Lake said. "It was just a bad business deal." "The press is about to shift gears," said the chairman of media relations. "You're new and you haven't been subjected to enough scrutiny. It's time for them to get nasty." "It's already started," Lake said. "I have no skeletons."